We're at the Summer Cattle Industry Business Meeting here in Denver, talking with Kent Backus from NCBA's D.C. office. And Kent, you're just back from China, part of the delegation that went over to help celebrate the reopening of that market for U.S. beef. A lot of things have still got to happen to fully get the commercial amount of beef going into that country, but we've made tremendous progress.
You're exactly right. And it was a tremendous honor to be there, to be alongside Ambassador Brancett, Secretary Perdue, and our President Craig Yudin, who got to deliver remarks. It was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and we're very, very happy to see beef back into China. But we also know that it's going to be a slow process because, obviously, we've got to rely on the U.S. Meat Export Federation and other companies to be out there identifying those markets in China where we can sell that beef. But on the production side, that's exactly what NCBA is going to do, is we're going to try to educate our producers as much as possible as to what it's going to take to be able to start delivering cattle so we can sell beef into that market and meet that demand. There are some restrictions on what we can send. China has laws that restrict and prohibit the use of beta agonists and hormones, which are obviously very important technologies that we use in our industry. But at the same time, there's such a big market in China. We're going to try to find ways to both comply with these restrictions on our production, but still be able to produce enough product. So we got our foot in the door, and in a few years, we think China can be a very good market, a very big market for us. They consume a lot of cuts that Americans, find less desirable. They're like the top export market for omasum or stomachs. And so when you look at things like that, obviously that's not something American consumers are looking for at the grocery store. But we see a lot of opportunity for those kind of cuts. But also China has a lot of very big international cities. You have a lot of people from across the world that live in cities like Shanghai, Beijing, and they want that high-quality grain-finished beef that we produce. Right now, that's being provided in limited supply from Australia and from Canada. But when we stack our product against theirs, we think that we're going to be very competitive in meeting that demand.
For the producers, as they work on, lining up all the verifications, all the things, we already have some of those type of things in place, both from our days when we were trying to match that 20-month rule with Japan, and I guess even the European market today.
You raise a very important point there, and the fact is that anytime we've gotten our foot in the door, especially in Asian markets, there's been restrictions, and as we've developed those markets, we've been able to overcome them. In the short run, that means we're going to have a limited source of cattle that can go because hormones do play an important part in the overall value, especially at the feed yard level and the producer level. So as we start to adjust that and we find ways to comply, I think that we're going to have a lot more opportunities. The U.S. Meat Export Federation is estimated that within the next 5 years we could see China as a market of about $300 million in sales annually. But really the sky's the limit. China is a new market when it comes to beef imports. They really haven't started importing beef until about the last 5 years, mm-hmm. And as a result, they've become one of the largest importers of beef in the world. And when they got a fifth of the world's population, a middle class that's larger than the entire U.S. population, I really think that we have a lot of unmet demand for beef in China, and that's what we're going to try to explore, find the ways that we can produce that beef and then send it to the Chinese consumers.
The other area I know you're spending a fair amount of time on when it comes to the trade issue is NAFTA. We're watching very closely what's going to happen as far as the give and take between the Trump administration and our neighbors to the north and south.
Well, by far the North American Free Trade Agreement has been one of the best free trade agreements for the U.S. beef industry. When we see the development of the Canadian market and the Mexican market and what that means for our producers, we're looking at, on average, about $1 billion in sales to both those markets. Those sales have been down over the last few years because of the strength of the U.S. dollar. It's made us less competitive, but the demand is there. Mexico is a great market for a lot of cuts like tongues, tripe. Again, things that are not going to sell at a premium here in the U.S., but are flying off the shelves in Mexico. So anytime there may be a disruption in that North American supply chain and our ability to meet that demand, not only in those countries but in others as well, we're a little concerned. So our message to the Trump administration has been very clear. It's do no harm. You know, we've seen that NAFTA works for us. And while there may need to be some touch-ups in other areas of the ag industry, and then there are other industries who, quite frankly, probably need further negotiation, let's limit the negotiations to those areas. Let's limit that scope, and let's make that process move as quickly as possible, because we want the Trump administration to focus its efforts on either rejoining TPP or prioritizing a bilateral free trade agreement with the Japanese. That's the bigger concern that we have, because I'm pretty sure that most of folks out there have learned, but the Japanese just struck a deal with the European Union, and essentially you're giving them most of the same terms that we negotiated under TPP, which means that European beef will, instead of facing a 38.5%, that will phase down to 9%. And we expect that to start to kick in 2019. So we can't really afford to keep putting U.S. producers further behind in our leading export market. By the way, Japan represents $1.5 billion in sales last year. We can't afford to put our people at a disadvantage when we've seen real return in that market. So our message on NAFTA has been clear. You know, let's make it short, sweet, to the point, but do not jeopardize the good access that we already enjoy in the beef industry.
Early conversations you've had with folks within USTR, maybe other players within the Trump administration, do they understand the urgency of doing something with the Japanese?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, if anything, the Trump administration has been very receptive to our concerns. You know, they have a lot of good people working and trying to provide that information to President Trump. Secretary Perdue has done a fantastic job of listening to stakeholders and trying to find a way to make it all work, because we're part of a bigger economy. We're part of a bigger production chain, and we have to respect the fact that there are parts of NAFTA that need to be adjusted. You know, it's a 25-year-old agreement. A lot has changed in the world in 25 years, and so we need a trade agreement that reflects that. But for the beef sector, we're doing great. Let's leave it alone. But at the same time, they also realize that, you know, we're not only falling further behind the Australians in the competitive market for Japan, but now the Europeans and potentially some of the other TPP countries since we've walked away from TPP. So, yeah, there's a lot to work on, and that's why we need people to stay engaged.
Thanks, Kent. Kent Bacchus of the NCBA's Washington, D.C. office talking trade issues with us here at the Summer Cattle Industry Meetings in Denver. I'm Ron Hayes reporting.